Parshas Mishpatim. So, just finished Asaras Hadibris, and now the Torah really started a little bit at the end of last week, is getting ready to explain the mitzvahs that were just given. We think, especially these mitzvahs, we understand, okay, it had to start off with Avodah Zarah, like the Ramban explains, but then when it gets down to it, now we're going to talk about the Mishpatim, that's how you set up a country, these are things that make sense to us. We understand why certain things should be, how to uphold public relations, how to interpersonal relations, it all seems to come out from the monetary halachas. We know what's going on, make perfect sense to us. But if we look closer, we'd really see that we don't understand anything. Ramban says, at the beginning of the sixth parasha, let me explain to you how this is going to go over here. All right, there's seemingly a little bit of disconnect between all the mitzvahs. So Ramban explains how they all go through. And he says, so let me start you off with the first one already. Pasuk starts off with Eved Ivri. Why? V'bnei she'yesh b'shiluach ha'ev b'shan shvi'es. Sending the Eved out on the seventh year is Zechel Tzias Mitzrayim. Is Zechel Tzias Mitzrayim, which was mentioned in the first of the Asaras Hadibros. V'yesh bo oid Zechel, my Sibrashis, because Shabbos has another Zecher, like Shabbos, because the seventh year is like the day of rest from the Shabbos. It's also the Shvi and the Yovel. Yovel is the most Mufchar. This sounds very high on what I'm saying exactly. Lost me also a while ago. The Ramban is telling us we don't understand anything. These are extremely, extremely, extremely deep, 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 deep things that are sitting in each of these mitzvahs. You wonder why Asher Tosim Lifneim, it says in the first pasuk, V'loig Lifnei Gayim, even if they done, even if they have the same din, even if they do the same type of judgment, that you still shouldn't go to them, you should don it yourself. You know why? This, there's no comparison. There's no comparison. Our halachas of what you do when someone who steals, even if it's similar to theirs, community service has no shaykhs. Their community service will be community service. Our community service, quote unquote, has so many things going on behind the scenes that are connected to up high on top that we can't even begin to fathom. And Hashem is so nice to us. He tells us, just do it. You don't even have to know all this. It makes it special to us that we should know that this is connected to everything. Chaim Volozhiner attempts to explain a little bit for those who understand it, how mitzvah affects the whole world. And Averis has to show them the opposite. This is what's coming out from here. Medrash says, Atikinatim Esharim. You made Yashrus Loyavecha. You made things straight that on these mishpatim that you gave to them, they make fights, and then they end up making shalom. What is that supposed to mean? I mean, is that what we're looking for? That's what we're shooting for. We're aiming for. We're aiming to have a fight and then end off friends. What's going on here? The Dubna Magid said a mashal to a villager that is speaking to the person from the city. Says the person from the city, oh yeah, we have this street, we have this store, this street, we have this store, and then don't even get me started on the amount of doctors we have. The villager says, amount of doctors? I don't know what that means, amount of doctors. Yeah, let me hear. Well, for the eye, we have this. For the fever, we have this. For the foot, we have this. The villager, like, his ears turned off 10 minutes before that. Doctor for any... I don't even know what those things mean. You need your leg cut off? That's when you go to a doctor. That's all the villager knows about. Right? Each was looking like the other one, that like they're crazy, right? Says the Dubna Magid, we have Mishpatim. Mishpatim makes us very adinos. It makes us very sensitive. It makes us sensitive people, just like the person who grew up in the city. Because he grew up in the city, not out in the dirt in the open, that's why it's not just that they have more capability in the city than in the villages. It's they are more sensitive people in the city because they grew up with growing up with the better life makes it that they are sensitive to these things. The villager, having grown up in the dirt, his body's not as sensitive to all these things. As Yidden, we are sensitive to all these things in a way that something starts going wrong. Yeah, we'll start getting, oh, what's the halacha? What's going on? Is this person doing right to me? Is this person not doing right to me? Sounds a little bit like malicious at first, but you know what? The end of it's going to be, since we're all working with one halacha and one dayan and one Torah, it's going to work out that they're friends. Goyim, they don't have any of these halachas. Don't bother me with these. But you know what comes with don't bother me with these things? It seems like everyone's nice and polite, but you know, when people start keeping their distances and when people start running into each other, and then there's no one Torah, there's no one country, there's no one system to keep everyone straight, that's where you start having that there's no shalom b'sayif. That's how lucky we are to have these mishpatim. Yeah, might seem like it's a big to-do, a big thing to deal with that we have to deal with. No, but that's the oisim eriva zeim zev, and then oisim shalom b'neim. That's when we end up with shalom. Just to bring up this point a little more, a very famous story, perhaps we said it before in this year, with Rav Shalom Shadron. He's walking down Malch Yisrael. He gets to Kikr Shabbos. He's about to start walking down Rechay Me'asharim, and all of a sudden he's hit by the biggest, worst smell you ever smelled in your life. And he almost couldn't go further, but he had to go further, and I guess the streets weren't as well on the sides, whatever, it was easiest to go this way. So he continues and keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Finally, he sees in front of him a few Arabs sitting there working on the sewer. And they're sitting there in the middle of the jar, in the middle of the sewer, they're sitting there. And fine, they sit down in the middle of all this. He's waiting to see what happens as he's passing by. They stick their hands full of stuff. They stick their hands into their pockets, pull out a sandwich, sans plastic bag, probably with some hummus and whatever, and with that, they just go eat it like that. Mitten the dirt. To us, that's the crazy. Yes, bare hands, bare everything. To us, that's the craziest thing in the world. But you know what? If you grow up like that, you're not sensitive to these things, then remain like that. We are sensitive, right? We have, forget about what we're even trying to bring out from here. Of course they ate it. We have halachas even about that the Torah would command us not to do things. The Torah gufos makes us in sensitivity. But obviously, right? Go back to the Black Plague in history, the bubonic plague, right? Who ended up dying? They said, oh, the Jews must have cast a spell over us, and that's why we're all dying. They're not. What was the answer? Because we washed the tails of dying. That's why the Black Plague didn't hit the Yidden, really. The Goyim didn't really know what germs were. They barely washed up. They didn't have halachas. So yes, the halachas make us more sensitive people, but it makes us more sensitive people in a way that it ends us up, obviously, on the correct path. To bring out another point, Reb Sol Salanter, it was said upon him, the altar of Kelm said, the Reb Sol Salanter would not sit in a room with money that wasn't counted. In other words, if you would run into me and say, please watch this, the stack of bills, and I would run out, he would run out of that room like the devil. He would run away from it. And the Alter Kelm used to say, I don't get it. I wouldn't have a problem. I would count it and whatever, or you know, you fine. It's a small pile. Okay, you'll be back in 5 minutes. I'd be okay. But you know what says the Altar of Kelm? It's because Reb Sol Salanter saw money and saw the Torah and Halacha as fire. As you know what? I don't know what the Yitzhara could do. I don't know if the Yitzhara is going to say to me that, you know what? He probably doesn't really know how much is in that pile himself. What's the big deal if I slip a bill? You know what? I won't even take it for myself. Someone asked me for $100 for tzedakah. What do I know is going to happen? If you see the mitzvahs and the halachas as set up to make us better people, then that's mainly why you're more sensitive. The altar, with the altar of Kelmwood, but I'm being asked to watch it, right? The fact that I don't know how much is in there that I'm being asked to watch is already dangerous. The altar of Kelm.
If he's in the room, someone else is watching.
He was saying, I don't think I would have had a problem. But he was saying upon his Rebbe, Rebbe Sol Salanter, you know why my Rebbe must have felt that it was a problem and would not have stayed in such a situation? Because, for instance, think about Yichud for a minute, right? Right there, we could all understand. Or even if we don't understand, we know the halachas are there. The Chazal say of what could happen. So, if we would see Torah for what it is and halachas for what it is, it would make us more sensitive people in a way to be sensitive to what Reb Sol Salanter is being sensitive to. Yeah, there you go. I'll tell Mats plenty of my school. You never know what's going to happen, especially with money. Money is the cheapest thing, but you know what? It works both ways. It works that you might, the scrub used to say, Geld is the billigste Sach. Money is the cheapest thing. There are other bigger things you have to worry about. Obviously, you need money, but I'll call upon him. So with that, to start a little bit, Parshas Mishpatim. So it says by the Eved Ivri, Begapa Yove, Begapa Yetze. If he comes in by himself, he leaves by himself. In other words, he cannot marry a Shivcha Keninus. There's a halacha that if a Yid is married and then he becomes your Eved, you're allowed to marry him off to a Shivcha Keninus in order to have Avadim come out of that. And obviously you'll end up keeping all of them, but not if he was single before he came in. What's Pshat? Well, what's the difference? So the Baal Taisus an answer that a person has the most nachas ruach from his first wife, and therefore, if his first wife ever that he marries is a shivcha keninus, then chas v'shalom he'll never want to leave her. Oh, big problems on her hands. So therefore, the Torah came to say that you'll ask me, what if the guy was married before but he's not married now? Good Shiloh, that wouldn't necessarily answer that. Second Teretz, although, would possibly answer this. The second answer that they give is that perhaps he'll see a Shivcha that's extremely beautiful and he'll sell, right? Because there's two ways to get into being an Eved Ivri. Either that you don't have money or that you steal. So either he'll do one or the other. Either he'll talk to steal to end himself up in that situation, or he'll say, he'll see a beautiful Shiva, oh, I don't have money, and I'll get sold to that person, and then I'll want to marry. So therefore, it's only if he's married that we at least then hope at that point that that'll hold him and that won't, wouldn't be the reason that he'd be doing it.
This is not the end of the tour.
No. A similar thing, like in reverse to this, is that a kain gadol is only allowed to marry someone who was never married before. Why? We're afraid he'll see someone with a beautiful wife. His power of the shema mavirish, he'll kill the guy, and then he'll marry her. Memela, he's right. I'll tell him matzchay di meischa. Right, so Memela, right, and look at Bayashani. Look at the kind of gedolim that they had. Not single. There, the Varda is a girl who was never married before. So she's never married before. Good, so he can marry her if he wants.
What if she doesn't want to marry?
Okay, come on. I'm just saying it's a little bit of a similar thing, like in the reverse.
The man came and he said, "I want to marry."
Okay, fine. We know that Pasuk Vav. It says that if he doesn't want to stay, what do? He brings him to Bezdin. You bring him to the door. Oy ala mezuzah. The pasuk says, or to the mezuzah, right? Which Rashi really says that we don't do the mezuzah, right? It's just telling the mezuzah in order to tell you that just like a lintel of the door is standing, so to the delis has to be something that is standing, perhaps sort of a permanent thing. But it doesn't really mean the mezuzah. Then you do the piercing, goes in, wonderful, and he's Eved forever until Yovel. What happens if you have an Eved Kenani who decides to run away from his master? You have Gemaras that speak about this. What if he runs away from his master? You find him. People are fighting over who's the Eved Kenani is whose people. What if the guy just decides one day, you're not my master? Is there any way that we would have proof, perhaps, to say that you belong to this guy?
Why don't they make tattoos?
So in effect, that's what this was. The Chizkuni says that each person is a different height. So therefore, you go to the. They made sure that they kept track of which door. They probably used Bezdin's door. They kept track of which ear hole was used by which guy. And therefore, when he says, "Oh, I'm this guy. I'm from this guy," we just bring him to the door, line him up. Whose hole are you? When do we make this hole? For who? We have it all down in the ledgers, and now we know whose it is. This is interesting, Chizkuni. Why don't we just lechatchila?
No, from the beginning.
That's what I'm saying. From the beginning. Yeah. Okay.
Shimon ben Gera's Avadim ran away outside
Yerushalayim,
and that's how Shlomo
Melchizedek
was able to kill him.
Because he ran after them. There was Avadim Yisrael or Avadim Kenanim. This is Avadim Yisrael. I hear. Al Kopanim, just an interesting thing on this Chizkuni, that the Mechilta and the Rambam's Lashon is, you do it Ad Sheyagia L'Dos, until you get to the door. Which is mashma that, and Taka, they hold that the door could be a stone door. You're not going into that, and even if you want to tell me like a little bit is going to chip away, you're not doing enough. But the Chizkuni says beferish that it was a wooden door. Wooden door fits much better, right? You get like some sort of drill bit, get it through, and then it's going through. So it's just an interesting machlekes, what exactly, what type of door it has to be. Moving on to the next little parasha in Mishpatim, right? Many, many dinim over here. A person selling his daughter, we know that there's a way for her to get out of it. Vehefta. What does that mean? Redeem her. Rashi says, Yitin la makam li padas ulat, says, leave room for her to be redeemed and go out. Sha'afu misayeya bepidyoinas. He also helps. In other words, for instance, if she was sold, let's just say it in our terms, what Rashi's trying to say, she was sold for $6 for the 6 years. She already worked 3 years for you. So that means you made $3 back. Let her buy herself back for $3 and let her go free. Simple cheshbon, right? She works for you 2 years, then that means that you made back $2. Let her pay you $4. Okay. What's the misayeya? What are you helping over here? That's a simple math calculation. Work by the amount of years she worked is what you get back. That's what you take back. That's the amount of money. What does that have anything to do with anything? What's the help? What's the helping? Nice question. I remember this bothered me for years, and I never learned Kedushin, but learning this Rashi for years, it says he helps her get out. The owner helps his maidservant who was given to him get out. What's one of the ways? Math calculation, simple. Each year is worth $1. You paid $6 to get her. She worked 2 years for you. So now she like gave you back $2. So let her give you $4 more back for the 4 years that she won't work for you. Or $3, 3 years, whatever. But what's the help over there? What are you helping? That's a simple math, cheshbon. I buy something for you, I pay you. I do something for you. Okay, but what's the helping? What's the helping?
That they have to work all the years.
Okay, so then should just say, what's the misayeya b'fityona? He helps. Let her is another thing. Well, what's the misayeya? So to give answers to this, yeah.
Perhaps the whole point that she was there was either because she stole so she didn't have money, or because she did something wrong to try to get into servitude to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
So he helped her. Because somehow during these last few years, she got the way to make money to pay him back. So he showed her a way to work or a way to live a different lifestyle.
Interesting. You're saying, but it sounds like from Messiah bepidyon. It sounds like the actual redeeming. This actual calculation at the end is a help. What's the help? So all the answers center around the same point that basically, if you think about it, work it out. You're dealing with what, right? The girl's under 12. So let's just say you're dealing with a 5-year-old girl, right? Is it fair?
No.
Is it all them? That wasn't the fair. That wasn't the fair question, right? That's the fact.
You're dealing with that sort of. Is him helping her, because if she's a 5-year-old...
No. The Mefarshim are mashma that the father already did her a begida, already was like a traitor to her by selling her out as a maidservant. Maskim. Kacha. That's what the Torah sets up. Look in the history books. Apparently, forget about the Jews. Apparently, it was a normal thing back in those days. Look at the sweatshops back in the beginning of America. How old were the kids working? Right, this was a normal thing. So Torah set up a way, a mitzvah of how to deal with
the
way.
And the boys now, the father owns them or not?
There's no such thing by a boy. Stomach, he can't be an Evid so young. But does he own them like that? I don't know. I think it's a little bit different way than the girls. I'll call upon him. So they say like this. She really got older. She really got older and better and stronger. All the answers basically are saying that when she was 5, is it fair enough to say that she worked a full dollar that year? No. So therefore, you might demand, well, you really only, I know you worked 2 years, but you didn't really work $2 worth for me. You only worked like $1.50. Still, the Torah says, sorry, pretend she worked a full 2 years for you. Either that way or the end of it, that she's making more at the end or more at the beginning. All the answers are centered around that nekuda that she was a certain age at the beginning and was only able to do a certain amount, and at the end she's doing a different amount, and yet the Torah is telling you keep it a fair cheshbon. That is basically the Torah of all of them of the Misayeya. Okay, fine. Moving on to the next little parasha, right? It says that Maki Ishva Mes Mes Yuma, someone who kills someone, he dies. Asher lo itzada, if it wasn't planned, v'ahim ina liyada, v'santa chamak ma'shayon l'shama. Make an Ari Miklat, work it out, that they should have a place to run to. Says Rashi, a famous thing, Holikim ino liyadai. Hashem made it happen. What does it mean Hashem made it happen? Says Rashi, why did this happen? Because it's like David said, which is the Mashal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that what? That you have two people, one killed by accident, one killed on purpose. The guy who killed by accident didn't have Edim. The guy who killed on purpose didn't have Edim. So this one, who should be Reuven, who should be killed for killing on purpose, he has no Edim. The guy, Shimon, who killed B'shoigeg, has no Edim, so he's not going to Golos. So what does Hashem do to get these two people their just punishment? He makes them come totally to one true. Hotel. This guy is sleeping under a ladder. Reuven, the killer, the actual killer. Shimon, the killer B'shoigeg, is sitting on top of the ladder. He falls down, falls on Reuven. Reuven dies. Now Reuven has gotten killed, and Shimon is around in a public place where people see he's killed B'shoigeg. He runs to Ari Miklat. Beautiful. Hashem worked it all out. That's the Chazal. Okay?
Nobody died in Ari Miklat? No one does not murder in Ari Miklat? What was the Ari Miklat like?
It was a safe haven. Goel Adam was not allowed inside. You're saying, let's say someone kills someone in Ari Miklat?
No, how do you protect? Is it like walls around?
It happens to be there were walls, but the Goel Adam was not allowed to go inside. Yeah, the protection. Yeah,
if the
it was
guy
protection.
Came in and killed you, then he would be at fault.
He'd be at fault. Yeah, there were walls for protection. They probably had guards also, but he was not allowed to come in. Anywhere else in the world, he was allowed to kill him. Allowed to, maybe even a mitzvah. Maybe. Most maybe a mitzvah for other people. In. But we'll deal with that when we get to those parshas. But this specifically for now.
What about the first Goel Adam?
Oh, we'll get to that. Very good. So, the question is like this. All the Rishayim and Acharyim deal with this. This guy, Reuven, the one who actually killed, he killed someone. How are we supposed to kill him? How is Beis Din supposed to kill him if we would have known with Edom? How are they supposed to kill him? With the sword, Saif. And yet, we know that there is such a thing of deaths similar to what Beis Din gives, that's fair enough. But you know what this is similar to? Where the guy is falling down the ladder onto this killer, Skila. So it doesn't match up. How is that fair? How is that just? You want to say at least Hashem got his neshama out of him, fine. But like in Einish, it's a little hard to say. What's going on over here? So the Tosfos Rashi and Makkos answers that since he didn't push him, which would be Skila Dik, rather he fell on him, it's more like, again, Saif is a form of Chenek, so it's more like Chenek, so that could perhaps be an answer. Tosfos in Saita says that since the guy killed Benefilam, he also got killed by falling on. In other words, that how did this first guy kill? I think what it means is true. It's not necessarily the just punishment of what Beis Din would have given necessarily, but it's more a mida keneged mida thing of how did the first guy kill? He killed by, let's say falling on someone with a knife or something like that. So that's why so someone's falling on him in a similar if, and it's not necessarily the actual punishment. Which you'll ask on that. Okay, very nice. So that works only. But what if he killed the guy because he burnt him? So it doesn't match up, right? Exactly. What? He shot him, exactly, right? That's Aruch Haner's question. Very good, Naftali. Aruch Haner gives another answer. They all go on that Mehechatesi. Aruch Haner says, let's say it's talking about that the guy killed on Shabbos. God kills on Shabbos. He has two Averis now, killing and being over Shabbos. Shabbos comes with Rabbi Nechayev Skila. But
when Chazal said this, they didn't mean that this was the only way that.
That's exactly right. Yeah, exactly. That's what you have to. That's what you probably have to answer for those others. But Lomai said these Achorinim are asking the kashas. Yeah, you have to know. Okay. Let's get to that question. What's the point of Golos? What is the point of going to the Ir Miklat? Is it to protect yourself
to learn
from the Goel Adam, or is it as a punishment?
Both.
Why do you think both?
Because it can't be one or the other.
Because it can't be one or the other.
It's to learn from the ways of the Levium whose cities they
ask him, there are good in Yanim, but when you get down to it, what's the point of Golos?
by the two choices?
Again, is it to save myself from the Goel Adam?
Or?
No shaykhis. That punk happens to happen. But the main point is, me, Hashem, Inoinish, a punishment that I got that I have to go. Maybe in order to go learn from the Levium, but which is the main point? You know what might say something? This story. If the point is to protect yourself from the Goel Adam, then what does this story have to do with anything? This story of the meeting at the hotel, good, I understand that I need to get the first guy killed, but the second guy, I need to get him into Gaulus. Why do I need to get him into Gaulus? No one knows about it, the first story, Bechal. And yet we're still trying to get this guy into Gaulus. Why? Must be because Gaulus is still some form of punishment that he has to get, and it's kedai to have him happen. Might he have the second Goel Adam running after him now? Yes. Yes, but that's like a byproduct that Hashem set in force. Yes, we want to make sure he gets there. We have signs up, and it should be big open signs that everyone sees, and we make sure that they're evenly spread out for sure. That's definitely a point. But the main point, it would seem from this story, is really the punishment Shabbai, and that's why it would work.
Is he moving by himself or moving the guy to the Kofa?
I don't know. It does say that a Rebbe might have to go with his Talmud to Gaulus. I don't know what that means. You mess up the Rebbe just because of that, but I don't know. I don't know exactly.
I don't know. He has 20 kids.
Yeah.
If it's a punishment, then why would he go? He did it for Shaggy.
What does Shaggy have to do with not needing a punishment?
Because he...
Shaggy doesn't mean Inus. If it was an Inus, he wouldn't be going. Shaggy means he could have been more careful. Right? Man, the Shaggy threw the whole tire. Why is the Inus not bringing carbon? Inus doesn't bring carbon. Shaggy brings the karma chattas.
You accidentally turn on a light on Shabbos. You're still
punished. Yeah, yeah. You want to say, Yechvesish, someone picked you up in the air and threw you against the wall and you hit the light, that you mask him. That's total Inus. But walking by a table and you accidentally end up moving the light, I don't know what that is. I don't know. Okay. The Torah says, the Torah moves on, gets into monetary things, pulls the famous ayin tachas ayin, which we know Chazal say is money. The Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, said a nice remez. It says ayin tachas ayin. If you go to the letters that are after the letters of ayin, in other words, ayin, what's after ayin, what's after yud, what's after nun, then you have after ayin is pei, after the yud is kaf, after the nun is samach, pei, chaf, samach, scramble it, kesef, money. A remez to Chazal that it means money, not the real thing.
We're not talking the death penalty.
Correct. Although there are hava minas, but Chazal teaches that none of that means this. It means you pay your way out. Rabbeinu Ephraim says, interesting, you look at the Rashi Tevis of Ayin, Shein, Yod, Regel, all the things the Pasuk mentions, they spell Ayin, Shein, Yod, Resh, Usher. You have all these things, you're a rich man. Your hands work, your eyes work, feet works, your teeth work. Rich man. Azizok, the Baltaisis, Rabbeinu Ephraim. Moving back half a minute to the Eved Kenani, who was also dealing with Shein V'Ayin. He goes out B'Shein V'Ayin, right? Why specifically these? Now, it's really any one of the 24 Rosh Yevarim. Why specifically is Shein V'Ayin mentioned? And Shein V'Ayin is definitely the tooth in the eye is mentioned for many things on its own, besides for the 24. So what is special about these two? So the Das Kenim says that this is to be misakin for their chait. What did Kenan do? Chum, or Kenan, saw Noach, and he told his brothers. So Mela, he did a chait with his eyes, and he did a chait with his teeth, is, I guess, the form of representing the mouth.
So he pointed?
What?
Didn't he point out the
form? You're saying, well, I mean, yeah, that's, I think, the famous thing, right? He was running, that's why his lips got big, the medrash maybe pricked the blazer, his nostrils are flared up, yeah, that's. Yeah, everyone gets it. Okay, I'll come on him, right? So, but no, but this is saying specifically, these two things, he did a chait specifically with these two things, the seeing and the telling. So therefore, his tikkun is, when that gets knocked out, it's like a tikkun to that thing. Like it uplifted that aver, so now he will go out, and that's also agav why it's being called Evi Kenani, right? Because we know Kenan was very involved in that maisa. Now, just once we're on that subject, why isn't Evi Ivri called an Evi Ivri? What did I have with Israeli? I have it every. Why isn't he called Eved Yisraeli, maybe, or Eved Yid? Why is he called Eved Ivri? Where do we find that terminology? So, the answer, Rabbeinu B'chai answers, all of Klal Yisrael stood by Har Sinai, and they heard from Hashem that I am your master, and this guy, he stole and ended up not having enough money needed to get sold, or he taka went and sold himself and got him for himself another master, as if we're holding before Matan Torah. So therefore we give him the name of Ivri, which is what Yidden were called before Matan Torah, as if to say, like, hey, you know, you're not really holding there all the way, holding where the Yidden should be holding, that we only have Hashem above us as being our master. Okay, one of the Arba of Zikin is bar, pasuk lama gimel, right? If someone opens a bar, you're chayiv. Nafal shom ashar chamar. It was a chasnahal bnei brak. It was a nail sticking out of the wall towards the entrance. And neither the chasna, anyone who passed that, ripped their suit on it. Every single person who passed that nail ripped their suit on it. Expensive suits. Many people. Who is Chayev? Who is Chayev here? You say the hall. Why the hall?
Because they should have checked it.
Okay. Any other ventures?
Whoever put it in.
What about the guy who rented the hall for that night? It's his. I don't care. What's it called? Lamaisa, it's his responsibility. Check it, maybe. Maybe the Chasen Kala. Maybe the people themselves.
Yeah, sure.
Why not? Halacha is pashtus. Everyone is putter. Why? Because we have a drasha of Chazal, Nafal Shama Shar or Chamar, and we darshin Shar V'loy Adam, Chamar V'loy Kalim. Kalim are not chayiv in bar. That means any objects that fall in a bar, along with whatever fell in there, let's use the general thing of the Gemara, that your ox is pulling and it falls into the bar with a bunch of objects, I have to pay you for your ox. I don't have to pay you for those objects. Bar is potter. Why? Because there's a cost of chazal. I don't know. Kohen, that's what it is. So therefore, right, this would be the same thing if there's a banana peel on the floor and someone slips on it. Who's chayiv to pay for that guy's hospital bills? No one. Similarly, the stipler was asked, right? We know that we're not supposed to throw our nails on the floor. It's very dangerous for a lady, chas v'shalom, could miscarry. So someone asked the stipler if somehow you know that someone's nail caused it, whatever, is the guy chayv for that? So someone wanted to answer, no, it's a dover schoolie, it's not, what's a, it could, not the chasron, it's not real, but in other words, maybe it works differently over there. The stipler said, anyways, the guy would be potter. Bar v'loy adam, chamar v'loy kalim. Why is that grama? That's bar. That's betzim bar. You dig something, you don't cover it, whatever it is. Well, why is that grama?
Why did you step out and she got scared she lost her baby?
I'm not aware how the nail thing works. That's how it works, that she gets scared.
Yeah, something like that. Kabbalah, spooky stuff.
It's spooky stuff that it miscarries. Yeah. What shaykh is her getting scared? I didn't know that shaykh is her getting scared.
So I'm just getting scared.
Okay. That could be. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I made that up.
It could be. Listen, maybe it'll explain it of how it works. But now, I thought it's just that she steps on a kacha. That's what happens. I don't know.
Maybe after the fact, because of the Kabbalah, she gets scared. On that.
Maybe, right, exactly. Maybe that, but not that I... Okay, fine. To skip to the end again, a lot of dinim, a huge parsha, extremely large parsha. Parsha talks a little bit about the Yom Tovim, and we know, right? It says, in Eretz Yisrael, they start with Saint Tal Matar on Zayin Cheshvan. Why? Why don't they start right after Sukkos?
For the people to go back
2 weeks in order for them to get back to you in the first place in Eretz Yisrael. So why don't we stop 2 weeks before Pesach? Question?
They're there before.
Hmm?
They're there before.
They're there before, what do you mean?
They're there before Pesach.
No, why don't we stop early. 2 weeks before Pesach? Let the rain, everyone's davening until Tfilas Tal on first day of Pesach. Why don't we stop Geshem 2 weeks before Pesach in order so people can make it? Right? We see we're extremely worried about them that we hold off the prayers for the rainy season. 2 weeks. So why don't you, that's just Shvach. All right? Why don't we, so all the Gehain to Gedolim. They're going to the base of Mikdash Shusen, so they don't care.
Yeah, they're
good. I hear. Al Kapon Rabbi Yashiv answers because you don't stop from a good thing. You don't stop asking a good thing. It might be bad for the people who have to come, but Lamaisa Be'etzim Rein is a good thing. To not start it, that's okay. But to stop it, that we're not going to do. Shlomo Zalman answered, a nice answer. When they go up for Sukkot, they're still wearing their summer clothes, right? Like we know they're from Miami, right? They're still wearing their summer clothes. So therefore, they'd get drenched on the way back. Masha'en Kein Pesach. So they're wearing their winter clothes. They'll come in their winter clothes. It won't be a big deal. They'll be protected from the rain. Chaim Kanevsky said, it says in the Pasuk, Beis Elikim Nahalach B'Rogesh, right? We'll go with Rogesh, with feeling, maybe with scaredness, whatever. He said that's a Rashi Tavis of Barad Ruach Geshem Sheleg, of hail, wind, rain, or snow. In other words, no matter what, we will go. I don't think he's saying it's a commandment. He's saying like it's automatic. We will go to the Beis HaMikdash no matter what. But to leave the Beis HaMikdash with all that or Lav Dafka, would they do it? And we want people to be able to get home and start running their normal lives again into the winter and to plant. So therefore, we don't start it then. Another answer is that rain at the end is not so bad anymore. You see already in Rish Chodesh Adar, right? It would have been this week's of Arba Parashis, if not for the Ibriar, so now getting pushed off another 4 weeks, but Rish Chodesh Adar, they start fixing the roads already. And a month later, it can't be it's that bad, that the rain is so bad. So therefore it's not so bad. Another answer is that, right, we know the roads, right? Right away by that, with the rain the whole year, I don't know if it works so well. But in New York generally, right, that first Kishmaka rain going into the winter, that makes the roads extremely slippery. And the cars are extremely able to slip. But after that, within the next few weeks, everything's fine already. Why? Because like the starting up is the hard part. So therefore, after Sukkot, the startup, that would be extremely dangerous on the roads. But after Pesach, but before coming, well, yeah, for them, they're walking their cars, their caravans and everything. Masha'enkin on their
cars.
Yeah, of course. Lexus. Yeah. Masha'enkin on their way to the Beis HaMikdash after the whole rainy season, even if it might still be raining, they'll already be used to the way. And it won't be so bad. A guten Shabbos.